Oh, you can hear what that is. That's the original intro music, because it sounds so good. We thought, oh, fuck it, we're just going to put it back on again. And why not? Because we can.
It sounds fucking great.
It does. Oh, look, that's Toby in the background, part of the intro. How exciting. He just had a wee, and he's come back in. He maybe didn't know that I was doing this. But anyway, that was him just there. He was in the background, which is quite unusual. This is Bonus Shiz episode. Well, it's not an episode. It's just Bonus Shiz 11, where we just talk about stuff. I'm not even going to tell you what we talk about. Well, I can tell you what we talk about. I bet you can guess what we talk about. We're talking about the Pakistanis again, aren't we? Oh, is it the Pakistanis, Toby? No, I don't think it is. I can't remember. I think you'll remember when you listen to it. We're talking about interesting things. At one point, we talk about a man that was caught taking a dump in someone's garden. Anyway, hope you enjoy it. We enjoyed it. It was quite good fun, and I'm really enjoying the intro music. Thanks. Bye. Definitely, I've pressed the record button and that is now working. What is it? Wednesday? Yes, Wednesday the 20th of March 2024. Well, it's Bonus Shiz, and in fact, I'm uploading this tonight, so fuck it. We're gonna mix it up a bit. We're gonna put the Dean Brown Part 3, which is scheduled and confirmed for Thursday evening at 7 p.m. And I think I'll upload that on Saturday morning. So we're just gonna mix it around now. We're gonna put the Bonus Shizzle Shizzle on the Wednesday evening, and then the other one, because then I can take my time editing it nicely, get it up on the Thursday, and that's the plan. I'm a little bit tired, Toby. So I did a bit of a run this morning, and I'm on this diet where I can only eat meat things, and now I'm feeling a little bit sleepy.
I think you're doing brilliantly, though. I think you're doing brilliantly. What we were reflecting upon, though, was the tendency when running and in motion for the gastrointestinal tract to be activated.
In fact, how we got onto it was that I said that I'm on this heavy meat diet for the next week and drinking the occasional Diet Coke, which I shouldn't do because I'm drinking lots of hydrogen water as well, and I've got my hydrogen water bottle, and we were just looking at the hydrogen water bottle with this LED light and the making of the hydrogen to see, is it just a gimmick or is it actually working? And then Toby being Toby started to deep dive into the chemical makeup of, you know, whether the hydrogen's the first on the thing with the stuff and the molecules and the fucking electrons and all that shit. Obviously, I wasn't following any of that, but it does go blue when I press the button and then little bubbles come. I'm hoping it works. So I'm drinking lots of that, but I'm also drinking some Diet Coke. If you drink too much Diet Coke and protein meat things, it can give you the shits. We then got on to talking about a dude who was taking a shit in people's gardens.
It was a high up lawyer or some member of the mid-level elite who was a bit of a pest, who got named and shamed. I think it was in the Perth papers a while back. A jogger who would often find it appropriate to go and lay a doozy on people's front doorsteps.
A jogger is almost a term you could use for that, even though it's already used for someone that goes running.
Definitely.
It could be a sort of a slang term for someone that takes a dump in someone else's garden.
Pinching off
I'm going jogging.
Going for a jogger.
It's a bit like dogging, jogging. Yeah, sorry.
Dropping off a gorilla finger. I mean, look, it's only fit that these elites kind of engage in that. And this guy was quite high up in the power system of this country. Now, it's also been interesting because when we're talking about the pieces of shit that run this state and various states, it's been my honour of late, as a result of the podcast, to connect with some very, very intelligent, kind and giving people who have quite an interest in geopolitics, particularly Middle Eastern geopolitics. Now, I know that Dale and I have devoted many episodes to talking particularly about the role that Israel has in destabilizing the Middle East. Obviously, when we've gone into the nature of 9/11 and how that was a joint CIA, MI6, Mossad operation designed to expand.
Allegedly, according to Michael Aquino.
That's it. According to the man that certainly would have known nothing as the head of psychological operations and senior military officer in the US for such a long period of time. But could have been those Pakistanis, you know. Could have just been those Pakistanis.
It's always the Pakistanis.
Always Pakistanis. So I became acquainted with a gentleman a little while back who's been a listener to our podcast. Originally, we actually began a conversation. I shan't mention his name out of respect for his own privacy, but I want to give a shout out to him when he listens to this. He's a Syrian Christian, a very learned man, and a beautiful soul. Came on in, we had a good chat at work one day, initially about esoteric Christianity, because I noticed he was wearing a cross, and we talked about various iterations of the Bible, and being such a lovely guy, he said, look, would you be prepared to share some information with me? I said, it would be my honor. And then, being the noble man that he is, he went and gave a lot of our previous episodes a listen. And he said, look, you know, I am something of a foreign relations geopolitics buff, and I have a lot of resources for you. So this man and I started chatting. Unfortunately, it's always been at work, so having to serve the great unwashed while you've got...
He's very clean and washed.
He's a very clean, very washed man.
Amongst
the unwashed. So this guy comes in just with his beautiful soul, and I've got people around there just... farting, shitting, jogging, demanding coffee alternatives and abusing me over the phone while this beautiful man is sharing all sorts of things with me. But I consider it a wonderful, wonderful test of one's patience and power, and a test of the ethics of episode 8 to maintain the north-south axis during that. But one of the things that I want to bring to people's attention over the course of this bonus shiz episode is a...
I love the way you say it with that accent. It's so funny. Bonus shiz.
Is a piece of literature that this fantastic man, this very clean man, the cleanest man among the great unwashed that I've come across, just an absolute saint, gave to me. It's called The Anatomy of the State, and it's by a professor of economics known as Murray N. Rothbard. Now, Rothbard is an interesting figure. He was an economist in the 20th century, American, a sort of economic historian, political theorist, who informed a lot of the American libertarian movements and anarcho-capitalism, which, you know, for one of the better
term... What's anarcho-capitalism?
Kind of the idea that you do have the right to private property, the right to profit, but not... necessarily in the context of a system that decrees that, oh, we're all about free enterprise, but we've got a Federal Reserve that's basically robbing people. So anarcho-capitalism would be akin to, I guess, in a way, something that you partake in business-wise, which is like, look, okay, I play the rules of the system, but in a way that I can sort of fund my lifestyle. I share it with a few other people. It's not too centralized. We do realize that we need to make a living. We're not going to have this stupid, naive idea of absolute socialism, you know, from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs, which is just a fucking retarded fever dream. Maybe at a level of spiritual realization, human beings are capable of that, but we need to be real here. There will always be a hierarchy in any system. In Waking World, we've addressed time and time again that we have objections to the current ruling system, which is definitely bloodline based and which aligns itself with a form of power discrepancy that is inexcusable. But I'm not going to pretend for one moment that in any society, even the smallest little society, you might have a bloke who, you know, enjoys a style of living that is slightly different to the poor bastard who's having to dig holes in the ground all day. So what I like about Murray and Rothbard, and giving credit to the gentleman who kindly turned me on to his studies, was that basically, Rothbard argued that all services provided by the monopoly system of the corporate state could be provided more efficiently by the private sector, and wrote, the state is the organization of robbery, systematized and writ large. He called fractional reserve banking a form of fraud and opposed central banking. He categorically opposed all military, political and economic interventionism in the affairs of other nations, and according to his protege, Hans Herman Hopper, there would be no anarcho-capitalist movement to speak of without Rothbard. He has a kind of fringe existence in academia, and the thing about that is people like, as we've said in previous episodes, the ruling system, rather, and our educational system likes to divide us into camps of opposites. You're either right wing or you're left wing, you know, you're Labour, you're Liberal. There's no room for a kind of nuance. So from what I've digested so far of the anatomy of the state, which was handed to me yesterday by this wonderful young man, I've been really...
Young man?
Yeah, I think he's younger than me. Or maybe he's my age.
I was picturing a sort of a more mature vintage.
No, this guy's got to be like my... I think he's either 29, 30. Yeah, he's, and this is why I've just loved it. Just very strong guy, got a fiance, good Christian principles, very intelligent. So it's been my honor to meet this guy. And again, one of the beautiful things about Waking World is that we've been able to reach out to people like this.
Is this the man that's got all the lots of information?
Oh, no. That's a separate individual
who I'm going to give another call out to
over the course of this one. So I will just... read just a couple of sentences from The Anatomy of the State. I don't want this to turn into a lecture of sorts or bore people, because part of the beauty of Waking World is that we do talk about people taking shits on jogs, giant golden dildos.
Oh, don't laugh too loudly.
Hockey puck dicks.
Dicks, golden dildos, people taking a shit on the thing.
It's all important. It's all part of life's rich tapestry. But what I like about this... bearing in mind that Dr. Rothbard received his doctorate in economics from Columbia University, knows what he's talking about. He goes, what the state is not. The state is almost universally considered an institution of social service. Some theorists venerate the state as the apotheosis of society. Others regard it as an amiable, though often inefficient, organization for achieving social ends. But almost all regard it as a necessary means for achieving the goals of mankind, a means to be ranged against the private sector, and often winning in the competition of resources. With the rise of democracy, the identification of the state with society has been redoubled, until it is common to hear sentiments expressed which violate virtually every tenet of reason and common sense, such as, we are the government. The useful collective term we has enabled an ideological camouflage to be thrown over the reality of political life. If we are the government, then anything a government does to an individual is not only just... and untyrannical. It is also voluntary on the part of the individual concerned. If the government has incurred a huge public debt, which must be paid by taxing one group for the benefit of the other, this reality of burden is obscured by saying that we owe it to ourselves. If the government conscripts a man or throws him into jail for dissident opinion, then he is doing it to himself, and therefore nothing untoward has occurred. Under this reasoning, any Jews murdered by the Nazi government were not murdered. Instead, they must have committed suicide, since they were the government, which was democratically chosen, and therefore anything the government did to them was voluntary on their part. One would not necessarily think it necessary to belabor this point, and yet the overwhelming bulk of the people hold this fallacy to a greater or lesser degree. Now, I wanted to take the time to read that out because I think it pretty much summarizes the fucking bullshit that we see repeated day after day, and which Dale has kindly gone into in the Is It News section of Waking World.
Very professional. That's a very professional bit.
Fantastic. I mean, so many things to my attention, because we are hypnotized consistently with this idea of we the people, we democratically elect, we do this, we do that, these people represent us. They certainly don't. I think Rothbard, and this guy's writing in the 1950s, makes it very fucking clear that we shouldn't have a centralized banking system, that we shouldn't have a set of elites who flagrantly lie about being members of the public, when in actual fact they're
They're either the fucking dregs of the planet, or they're the most elite of the elite of the elite of the elites.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think my study for this coming week, in addition to obviously part three of our interview with Dean Brown tomorrow, which Dale has got some fantastic questions for him. I believe that there were 25.
I just want to get through the fucking questions.
I do too.
I'm going to have to tell him that he has to answer in shorter sound bites.
Yes, because they're really fucking good questions. And I've had a lot of listeners actually come to me at my place of work and be like, wow, you know, we heard a little bit of it. And then they heard obviously what was read out later on. And they said, can you ask him this? Can you ask him that? So there are people who want to hear Dean respond to all of those. So Dean, if you do hear this, please do so. We love you. We admire you. We have a lot of time for you. But there are a lot of listeners out there who want to hear you give time to each one of these questions. So not only will I be looking at a little bit of Kabbalah and some other things to maybe throw to him at the end, but
he doesn't know much about Kabbalah.
Then what I'll probably do is gloss over that and we'll focus more on your interviewing him. In fact, I would much rather we get the October 7th stuff out of the way because that's the big thing. But I'll also be reading The Anatomy of the State, and I'm going to be going into a lot of anarcho-capitalism because I think it's important that we, as members of the conspiracy community, create a decent surrogate system for people. You see, I think I mentioned it before, time and again, we often come across individuals who are attempting to wake up, but they become, how can I put it, black-pilled, I think that's the term. They get to the point where they're so dark about what's going on that they don't see any hope, that there's no light at the end of the tunnel. And if we go back to some of our earlier episodes where we talked about the creative potential in every soul, and one of the reasons why our elites need to collectively hypnotize us, it's that we can change reality. We can change the course of events. The world doesn't need to go down the path it's currently going on. And I need to emphasize to everyone listening right now, there is hope. Remember that. No matter how dark it gets, you go in, you breathe out, you pray, you meditate, you do whatever it is you need to do. You go help someone in need, and something inside you wakes up and you change the fucking world.
Yeah. Yes, Tobias. I was scribbling things down. I wasn't not listening to you. I was scribbling things down to make sure that I mention before the end of this little thing. And there's absolutely no order to it whatsoever. And then I remembered that, I also was saving some... Oh, have I just cut in here?
No, right. This is good.
Because I go through and I like a lot of the old TikTok posts, and then I think, they're quite good topics to just spitball about. But then I always forget to look at them, and now I'm looking at them, and I'll be honest, it's not great radio if I'm just thumbing through a TikTok feed. I might try and find one of those in a minute. Yeah, I'll try and find one of those in a minute, because some of them are just funny things that I liked. Essentially that's talking about just basically government being not of the people for the people at all.
Yeah.
Which it isn't. I do want to speak about some more Israel stuff. I'm going to make a little note
Absolutely.
Of that. I don't want to hijack every single conversation and talk about Israel, but it's very topical.
It's very topical right now. And the fact of the matter is, if we, as people who go over previous episodes are familiar with, if you go into Freemasonry, it's offshoots like Ordo Templariensis, the role of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, Bronze Age ethno-religions going back to Babylon and before, going all the way back to Sumeria, the Anunnaki hypothesis. This does tie in heavily with what's going on in the Middle East. And I read it out in a previous episode, but I always like to remind people of this. The letter between Albert Pike and Giuseppe Mazzini from 1871, which does predict World War III.
Being between the Muslims and the Jews.
Exactly.
Someone said the other day, I don't know who it was, I didn't recognise the person saying it, but he was saying, who's the most powerful person in the US at the moment? And his answer was, he went through a few people, and his answer was Benjamin Netanyahu is the most powerful man in the US at the moment, has the most power in the US. I know I say every single week without fail, why has Benjamin Netanyahu got the most power in the US? Is it just clever I mean, I want to call it marketing. Is it just clever marketing of... no one knows the answer to this. I just want to spitball it for a minute.
Yeah.
Is it clever marketing by the Israeli machine over the last 100 years, give or take however many fucking decades, just a very slow creep into all places of power and influence by some kind of Jewish elite? Or is there something more to it? Or do people are people kind of, I never pick the right words, Toby, unlike you. Are people sort of beholden to the Holocaust narrative and they daren't step away from it because of how bad everyone's made it out to be? Or do people look at it through the lens of religion and say, oh, well, these people are biblically the chosen people of God? Or is there something more sinister going on? Don't know the answer. What's your opinion?
I think it's a very good idea to put that forward. And I would say that first things first, the Holocaust narrative is always repeated to us so that there can be no sort of criticism of a group. And it's such a naive approach because, of course, I can damn the Holocaust and the crimes that happened during that. I damn any genocide, just as I'm damning the genocide of the Palestinians right now. If we were broadcasting between 1933 and 1945, we would be damning the Nazis. So first things first, the Holocaust, the Shoah, if you want to use the correct Hebrew term, was a disgrace. There are all sorts of debates around that. But the Holocaust industry that has developed as a result of that, the Steven Spielbergs of this world.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you get an Oscar if you play.
Exactly.
If you've directed or produced a film set in Auschwitz, or you have some...
Those people are fucking disgrace because they sit there not having experienced it, having nothing but a script to read to the world to take the criticism and the lens away from genocide that is currently happening right now. Now, I know that there's been a recent film that's come out.
Oh, is this the one that I've read in the news?
Yes, you read about. That,
where it said about the guy, there was the Neve or the Neem guy who criticised, it was Glazer.
Yes.
Glazer, who'd done the movie called... flipping through the fucking boring paper I've already done this week, and it's making me feel soporific just doing it. Is that correct use of the word soporific?
I love
it. Not really. Oh, I'll tell you what, we'll just go quiet.
It was a film that came out, and again, it's the same thing with the History Channel. We are consistently shown images of World War II, and I myself am a history buff.
This is it. I found it! Director of the 2015 Oscar-winning film... The director of the 2015 Oscar-winning film Son of Saul by Laszlo Niemes has become the latest Hollywood figure to weigh in on the speech given by the Zone of Interest director Jonathan Glazer at the Academy Awards last week. So Zone of Interest... It would actually be quite interesting to see Zone of Interest and Son of Saul.
Oh, absolutely.
To compare those two movies and
see. Study as much of World War II as you want. I myself am a history buff. My family lineage is basically the generation before my parents are all military. They grew up in West Berlin. They're occupational forces. My grandparents were in the RAAF. My great-grandparents were in World War I. So essentially, my whole family is English military going up until the generation that then gave birth to me, and also on the Australian side as well. So it's important that we go over history. And I love military history. I'm a big fan of it. One of the things that, to answer your question before, who is the most powerful person in the US? And someone answering, well, it's Bibi. I think that's a very clever response because... First things first, I think the most powerful individual you'll never know the name of, but in terms of a figurehead who can get away with whatever he wants, AIPAC and the Israelis call the shots with the US. Now, there are other power groups. Let's not pretend that for one moment. I've said this before, the Roman Catholic Church, I would probably put forward as potentially the most powerful group in the world.
They still kiss the hand of the Rothschilds.
Yes.
Don't they? I mean, there's pictures of that happening, isn't there?
I think there will be a comfortable compromise. I don't think we can truly conceive of the extension of the Roman Empire.
I mean, why does the Pope wear a skull cap?
That goes back to the same biblical passages on why or certain forms of Orthodox Jews wear it, because the Catholics have their reading of the Old Testament, which means that one wears that to be humble in the face of God, that you kind of cover up, you know, that your crown is not exposed, that you're not fully, you kind of cover your head in humbleness towards God. There is a passage devoted to it, but they draw from a similar lineage. In the same way that Eastern Orthodox priests have long beards, one of the reasons for the Great Schism in 1054, I think, between the Eastern Orthodox and the Roman Catholic churches. There are a variety of tensions between Byzantium and the Western Roman Empire, but it came down to an Old Testament thing on the shaving of beards. So there's a reason why certain ultra-Orthodox Jews have the ringlets and the shaved head, and then they have a skull cap. These are all different readings of the Old Testament, how you're supposed to wear your fucking hair to...
The hair that God gave
you. That's it, you know.
The hair that God gave you that just grows a certain way, but it wasn't good enough.
Exactly.
So he changed his mind. Oh, sorry about that. I gave you the sort of brown curly hair. Actually, I need to do a certain thing with it because I made a bit of a mistake with it.
Keeps barbers in a fucking job. So I would put this forward. Within the context of the American elites, you've got to look at the Roman Catholic Church, which is infiltrated everywhere via the Jesuits, and also the Roman Catholic Church. If you're just looking at its possessions going back to, well, the past 2,000 years, look at the collected interests that would build on the rape and pillage and plunder that they've gathered. We did an episode on the Vatican and the Catholic Church, which I actually had a gentleman come in recently who teaches at a Catholic school, raised Catholic, and he commended us on that episode. He actually said he felt himself getting a little bit defensive internally, but was so impressed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, by what we had to say. And then he listened to your episode on number 8. And if this man listens to this episode, I want to thank him for his feedback. And I love that. I love that we're having that effect upon people. So to fully answer the question, it's not just a Jewish control system, and I'm going to be more specific there, a Khazarian mafia control system, because we're looking at the Khazars, the Ashkenazi.
Then what is the control that they have over
two areas in the US? They're concentrated everywhere, but take New York and then take LA. New York is the money powerhouse, and having been there, you would be amazed. I mean, America is a disgrace for race relations, and I'm disgusted every time that I have to look at a BLM or a Chicano or a white group or a Jewish group going on about how cohesive they need to be and lecturing us about inclusivity. They're the most fractured fucking society on earth, and it's also been fomented by a particular group who have headed this. So when you go to New York, you'll notice in the economic areas the Jews very much stick to their own areas. They don't mix outside of any other enclave. Blacks will be sitting there in their own poor areas.
Pakistanis?
Not really as many.
that's because they're in the underworld. No one knows. They keep themselves there. Like the hidden hands. The hidden Pakistani
hands. The velvet glove of the Pakistani elite.
That's why you don't hear about them.
That's it.
So powerful that they keep in the shadows. The Pakistani shadows.
So you can see, and I remember seeing it in New York, they have their own little enclaves and they control everything there. I mean, there's a reason why a lot of them didn't rock up to work on 9/11. There is a reason why Silverstein took out a big old loan before the towers collapsed. There's a clique there that control it, you know? There'll still be people down the bottom who aren't aware of that, you know, this is why I'm not profiling people simply on the basis of race.
But why does Rishi Sunak wholeheartedly support the Jewish agenda?
So that will then tie, so there's I will get to the English part of this. Yeah, so the second part of the American part is the Californian aspect of Jewry. Right.
They control
Hollywood and they control the porn industry. That's another huge part of the blackmail system. Look at the history of a guy like Al Goldstein. scene, he was the one that really pushed porn in the US. I mean, of course you had people like...
How's the porn industry having any influence on things?
Human compromise operations. So it also erodes... Again, I'm not getting on my high horse here. I've been a consumer of pornography. We all have been.
Never looked at pornography in my life, Toby.
I am amazed by how outstanding you are. I've never had a CWH either.
No, that's right. That obviously was total bollocks from myself there.
But I think, look, there are other clicks that
if
control
If any
it.
Of you have got husbands that say they've never looked at pornography, it is a lie.
Either that or they're getting so well serviced by their missos, they're not having to. But, the Italian mafia control the porn industry too. They have a big hand in it. They have a big hand in Vegas. So it's not any one
But Hollywood's not influencing your senators.
Level. Exactly. It is. In the sense that it programs the mindset of the people. So,
or are people so in awe of celebrity?
Well, look at Schindler's List. You know, like let's take that. That was a film. And I read the book, and the book is a fantastic piece of work by an Australian author, Thomas Keneally.
Oh, who lives in Whale Beach.
Yes. Now, would you believe it? Such is the level of entitlement and arrogance of certain members of this ethnic community that Thomas Keneally was giving a speech not long ago. Now, bearing in mind, this is the man that wrote Schindler's List, based on interviews, and it is an important
book. Is he a Jewish man?
No, he's an Australian man. And then it was adapted by Jews, and he gave a speech. And this disgusted me, because Keneally said, and he'd done all of this research to write the book, and I enjoin everyone out there, read Schindler's List, the book. I mean, it's a marvelous film. I'm not knocking the film. I'm not knocking what it represents. What I'm knocking is it and other forms of films being used to excuse the crimes of the state of Israel. So Keneally gave a speech wherein he was asked about the complicitness of people wholly in things like the Holocaust or any form of genocide. And I believe his response was, well, actually, I think a lot of us would have got along with it. Not to say that it was right, but he goes, this is how herd mentality
works. Is this
Keneally.
The author, yeah.
The author actually said that. And a Jewish man got up in the audience and issued such a complaint that Keneally himself was forced to apologize. How fucking disgusting is that? That this little piece of shit who had nothing to do with the immense work and research that Keneally did in honoring...
But why did Keneally just tell him to go fuck himself?
Well, because, you know, you can't really speak out towards certain people.
But why can't they?
Well, I would say that there's a compromise thing going on, and this then tying into the Rishi Sunak, why he bends the knee. The English branch of the Rothschild family is huge. They control a lot of the world's media, and I think, I mean, look, I know it's a really out there conspiracy, but you've got to look at the way in which William, the future king, excused himself from a family funeral the day after Jacob Rothschild had died. There was a huge overlap between Jewish blood, who had the money, wanting to legitimize themselves, with the nearly bankrupt English aristocracy in the 19th century onwards. The integration into well-to-do society through the likes of Benjamin Disraeli, the only Jewish prime minister that England's ever had, and might I also add an effective prime minister. The two greats under Victoria were Disraeli and Gladstone, was a big reflection of the gains that the Rothschild family had made since 1815, after the Battle of Waterloo, under Nathan Rothschild controlling the English stock market. So there is definitely an influence there. Also, to tie it back to when we were talking about world controlling powers, the Rothschilds have really only been players since the 1750s. So compare that to the Catholic Church. You've got 2,000 years there. Then you've got all these other bloodlines. But we're specifically talking about the Israeli one right now. And I think it's because there has been a group, a Khazarian group, because let's call them for what they are. They don't have any blood links to the original land, and even if they fucking did, you don't have the right to come back and sleep in a bed that you haven't been in for 2,000 years. It's interesting because when you look at the lineages,
as Dean would say, well, we did have a presence there for all that time.
Yeah, so did Christians and Muslims, and people lived there. A couple of them lived there. There was a Nathan of Gaza was hanging out in Egypt 400 years ago, and he recognized Shabbatai Zevi. You know, you'd always have a few of them there. I mean, the Crusaders were there too. The Muslims were there too. The Samaritans were there too. There were goat herders there as well. There would be people who identify with their local tribe who were there. To say that you were there, and then to legitimize the colonization of a whole fucking country, a country that is younger than bottles of wine I've drunk, might I add, you know, is such a piecemeal argument that from an intelligent man, I find that really quite shocking.
I wanted to find something that was on the Richie Allen show that was a... Did I put you off there?
Because No, this is good. Bring it up.
But I've got to find it, and that might take a little while. You were going to say something? Oh, no, Rishi Sunak. You already did the Rishi Sunak thing. Yeah, so what I'm noticing... I feel like there's two... There's two different positions, it appears. It seems like... So at the moment, you're hearing that the Gazans are starving. There's like a famine. And then you're hearing the gaslighting, or maybe it's not gaslighting, from the Israelis saying, oh, there's more, there's 80% more food is getting into Gaza. I know. Yeah. But... there's no let up in the denial, the utter denial in the accusations that are being leveled at them.
Yeah.
Like it's a 180 degree difference from what's being leveled at them, which is, well, I don't know what it's sort of industrial lie making.
It's Elon Levy. You know, it's the gentleman that look at his.
Well, it's Elon Levy, it's Mark Regev, it's Danny Denon, it's Michael Rapaport.
Yes,
it's,
exactly.
It's that lady. Who's the lady? Who's the Jewish ambassador?
I was thinking of the piece of shit that speaks on Sky News, Shari Markson. You know, these individuals, the whole point is that you don't even need a sophistication to your lie. You just keep repeating it. A lie repeated enough becomes truth. And the irony is...
What I was going to say was... there's obviously some deliberate deception going on from the... Well, I don't know. So it does make you question, well, is that the... I mean, clearly, you just got to look at how much of Gaza's been decimated
and
to know
that
it's... And
look at the Rafah, you know, the Rafah crossing. I mean, that's the big thing that I am very pissed off about right now. And I've been, you know, having these discussions and sharing this information with people. Rafah was supposed to be a safe zone. They permitted people in there, and still you have pieces of dog shit like Elon Levy.
Sippy Hotavelli.
Yes.
Sippy Hotavelli.
These people will sit there. These clowns and liars and running dogs for genocide will sit there and look you square in the eye and say, there's Hamas tunnels there. Providing them food. Or we're giving them forewarning.
I can see why the Israeli spokespeople would be doing it. But then when you get into a conversation on TikTok with some fucking person that's based over there, they fully believe exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So are they hoodwinked by their own government?
They're racist.
Do they know it's bullshit? Yeah.
They're a racist colonial settlement. It's all it comes... There is no difference... In fact, I would say it's far worse, but I would say that there is no real difference between sitting with your average Israeli and asking them their opinion of the Arabs than there would have been talking with a white Australian in 1948, incidentally, when the White Australia policy was developed, and asking them about how they saw Aboriginals.
Yeah.
You know, there is no difference.
Yeah.
They see them as animals. They see them as subhuman. They see them as a not only something to be removed, but the removal of them as a moral duty. And it was interesting. I read a post by an old lecturer of mine this morning, which I found very enlightening. He said, God, here I am eating a meal, overhearing a conversation between two women going on about how it's important to get rid of Hamas, while at the same time going on about the dangers of Aboriginal people and referring to them as quadroons, which, for those not familiar with the lingo here, means a quarter caste or someone who only has, you know, 25% of the blood and, you know, their own worst enemies. Now, that's another subject unto itself, but it was a comparison that I think is very, very timely because it's this colonial mindset. Now, I've said time and time again, I myself come from an English lineage. The English Empire was an awful colonial empire. I don't feel guilty for necessarily being on this land in the same way that Israelis have a right to exist in Israel. Might I emphasize this? At no point in waking world have we ever said that Israel does not have a right to exist. What we have questioned is, A, the legitimacy of the land claim initially, the methods by which the land was claimed, and the consistent genocide.
Well, yeah, keep going.
And this is the bollocks that makes me so angry. You might remember the clown delegation of Israelis who came to the UN when they were first called out after October 7th to account for their crimes, and they all conveniently pulled out a yellow star and put it on their suits. And what I was so glad of was that even the brainwashed people thought, what a fucking arrogant gesture. One, it's just stupid that you're playing the victims. And two, how disrespectful to those people who actually did have to wear a yellow star and were the victims. Because who are the people who are effectively wearing a yellow star right now? They're the Palestinians.
Yeah.
So for these people to come from a first world nation that is essentially a dole-bludging nation that receives its money from the US, from AIPAC, gets free education, free healthcare, military aid, any aid it wants, while the US fucking starves because of a very, very small minority of people who deliberately siphon this money off. This is a cancer that needs to be dealt with. And again, I have no issue with any group of people on the basis of their genetics. I have an issue with the political interests of a small elite who are causing genocide and lying to us in our faces about it.
Cunts, basically.
Cunts.
If you're not a cunt, then we like you.
Mm.
And I can't be anti-Semitic because I like Jonathan Glazer.
Absolutely. Yep.
And countless other Jewish people.
Norman Finkelstein is one of my heroes. Noam Chomsky is one of my heroes, you know. Isaac Bashevis Singer is one of my heroes. Aaron David Gordon, one of the original Zionists, Labour Zionists, who we talked about with Dean Brown, is one of my heroes. I have nothing wrong with the true spirits of esoteric Judaism and people who conduct themselves with dignity and grace. I have a problem with racist Zionism that lies in the face of those who want ethical conduct and conducts genocide openly.
Yeah. See, Glazer, nice Jewish man, said, our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. He said, it shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people, whether the victims of October 7 in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza. All the victims of this dehumanization, how do we resist? But, so that is a fairly empathetic, that's just the words of a man who is human.
Yes.
But then he gets it in the ear from this Hungarian director Neems that did the 2015 film Son of Saul, where he says Glazer should have stayed silent instead of revealing he has no understanding of history and the forces undoing civilization before or after the Holocaust. Had he embraced the responsibility that comes with a film like that, he would not have resorted to talking points disseminated by propaganda meant to eradicate, at the end, all Jewish presence from the earth. Had he embraced the responsibility that comes with a film like that, he would not have resorted to talking points disseminated by propaganda meant to eradicate, at the end, all Jewish presence from the earth. So there's talk about the eradication. There's always this talk about eradicating Jews. But where are the actions? The actions are the actual eradication of the Palestinians.
Exactly.
There's no fucking Jews are being eradicated.
No.
So then you get the Anti-Defamation League has called the speech morally indefensible, while the US Holocaust Survivors Foundation condemned it in an open letter. Foundation chairman David Schechter wrote, this is outrageous, wrote, "You should be ashamed of yourself for using Auschwitz to criticize Israel, although you can use Auschwitz to play the victim card for 80 years.
Yes.
If the creation, this is really telling, this paragraph, if the creation, existence and survival of the state of Israel as a Jewish state equates to occupation in your mind, then you obviously learnt nothing from your movie." So they openly see that they're not occupying a country because they're entitled to it.
They're full of shit. If you gave them an enema, they'd fit in a matchbox. Jonathan Glazer is a brave man for coming forward and saying that. But you look at the level of projection going on in the rhetoric of these people saying, oh, you're just falling for propaganda. What propaganda? When was the last time, apart from World War fucking II, and I'm not, that was a terrible crime, but when was the last time there was a mass genocide of that particular ethnic group? And have we not acknowledged the Armenian genocide? Have we not looked at the genocide of the Australian Aborigines? Have we not looked at the genocide of the Uyghurs in China right now, an Islamic community where over a million of them in concentration camps currently being subjected to all forms of torture, one of which includes, because they're very religious and they hold their virginity for marriage, being raped by guards.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not talked about. And you can't use the term genocide.
But the people say, oh, why aren't you talking about
exactly.
that stuff?
Well, Dean said the other week,
he said, what about... Oh, was he talking about Tibet?
Possibly.
About Taiwan. Yeah, I can't remember Taiwan. What it was. He was talking about something that was going on. I can't remember what it was, so I'm not smart enough.
It was a way of basically saying you
should go and deal with that first before you come and have a problem with us.
Bullshit, we'll deal with it all.
That's what they think.
Yeah, but that's always been a red herring argument, which is this attempt to say, you know, it's a bit like someone sitting there raping an old lady in the midst of a big old orgy of rape, and you've come in to stop the first rape, and he goes, listen, man, I might be raping her, but there's three people getting raped over there. Why aren't you dealing with that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, mate, like, cool. Like, I want to deal with all of it, but I'm going to start on you first.
Yeah.
And this is it. And it is so fallacious. The argument patterns used by these people are so full of holes, it resembles Swiss cheese.
Remember the steps, Toby. Oh,
it's just, it is.
No, you're right. It does anger you. It angers me. Have you seen the thing with Cindy Crawford and all the other Hollywood sort of superstars and other people saying how we stand with Israel and we're against anti-Semitism? And you think right now, you think to yourself, well, you know, you have these conversations on TikTok and you say, well, we've said this 1,000 times before, if you're abusing a dog in a cage, starving it, killing its puppies, and then it gets out of the cage and it gets you, you can't start saying, oh, we've got to feel sorry for the abuser.
Exactly.
So I don't understand what's it. But then there's a couple of other things I wanted to say.
I just wanted to quickly say, if Cindy Crawford, if you ever listen to this, how does it taste to lick that boot?
I don't know whether she's going to listen to it, if I'm honest. And then why do they roll out Regev, Denon, Levy as mouthpiece spokespeople for Israel, who are just awful people. I mean, that's just, there's nothing. Does anyone look at them other than an Israeli? Does anyone look at them and think, oh yeah, actually, I agree with that. That's that man is seeing it from my side.
It's the same as Ben Shapiro. I mean, you're dealing with a little sociopath.
Yeah, but Ben Shapiro is kind of self-made.
Yeah.
But these are actual spokespeople. These are pushed forward to say, go and convey the message. And sure, I mean, in military operations, it's about hearts and minds.
Yeah.
Well, they're not winning hearts and minds with that. So why do they do it?
Because there has been, and it's a very legitimate question that you got, because you and I watched that and you're like, are you fucking kidding me? This is the last person I'd have on my debating team basically justifying this. You look like a fucking idiot.
Yeah. In fact, you just sound like a fucking horrible cunt.
Exactly. These are sociopaths.
But they must have people in there who can put across some empathetical point whilst making you go, oh,
exactly.
Actually, yeah, maybe I can see your point then, but that doesn't exist.
They don't care.
So does that mean they don't exist? Do the people with that empathy not exist?
I don't think they see an opposite to what they're doing. We're dealing with a level of... Remember we were discussing the description of it being a theological war? Mm-hmm. We're dealing with a crusader mindset. We're dealing with a mindset that is no different from Pope Innocente, who initiated the First Crusade in the 1090s. Who gathered together people who thought that if they go to the Holy Land and they spill the blood of the infidel, they will be exonerated of all sins and go directly to heaven. We are dealing with an identical mindset, and it is frightening.
It is, isn't it?
I mean, that's it.
It's like, quite sick to think what they are doing and then what they're saying.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, I can't imagine... I mean, look, I know there's lots of atrocities that go on elsewhere, but I can't see how the Nazis, how they were behaving to the Jews in Germany.
Yeah.
How, if I could speak German, I can't believe they would be. It would be sounding much different.
Exactly, doesn't, and this is what's so disturbing about this. You know, the, and I've talked with people because, of course, my family grew up. One side of it in the occupational forces in West Berlin and West Germany, and they were there to, you know, basically eradicate, denazification was a big part of it, and then there was the Cold War. And I've heard from relatives of mine who actually, you know, the Germans have gone through a period of great shame, and they were ruined for, you know, World War II, and I think you know, they absolutely got what was coming to them, but you shouldn't punish the people. You know, Germany still lives in a lot of shame today, and there's a lot that Germany has to be proud of. Certainly not the Third Reich, but they have a rich cultural history, as all lineages do. But I do remember hearing some very disturbing stories from people who were in West Berlin and West Germany in the 70s. And these were family members of mine. And every so often, you would wind up in a situation where you'd... Because bearing in mind what World War II ended in 1945, so really mid-70s is only 30 years later. Some of these guys are only 50, your age, these ex-Nazis. And I remember a relative of mine was in a train carriage with a guy. They would have probably had the tattoo under their armpit of SS that they would have scraped off, but some old Nazi, or not even old, and he'd had a bit to drink, and he just said, with these piercing blue eyes, just started spitting this rhetoric about Hitler being right. And he said it was one of the scariest things he'd ever seen. It was like this monster was starting to wake up inside. And he goes, even though I could have taken the old cunt, he goes, it was like there was something so evil inside this, because, you know, he could see that this person was of a British extraction in an occupying zone, that even the Germans, who are very, very good at disguising their emotions, they really are, they're very good at lying, the Germans, he could see that there was still that conviction, and there were still these racist believers in the Third Reich and that mission. And the irony of this situation is, because, I mean, how you could excuse that is beyond me, is that we are dealing with people who literally have this same messianic mission to destroy an entire ethnic group, and they will go to bed and sleep soundly after doing that. They will look themselves in the mirror as they brush their teeth, and they'll think how great they are, and they will go to their deaths thinking that they have done God's work. That is what is so fucking foul about this. Yeah.
So then what, and then the other thing that I've written down here is, like, we always look at things that go on, you just sort of think things are unfolding spontaneously and organically. You don't think that they're... So you just think, oh, all this stuff's just kind of, oh, it's a reaction to October the 7th. Oh, this is just a, oh, it's just a thing that's now happening. This has all been, on for any government, for any government with any intelligence, it's all planned. Everything's planned. All the possibilities are worked out. All the, if this happens, this could, if this, we go down this route, these are the options. If we go down this route, these are the options. So Israel must have known that they clearly let it, they clearly either were either complicit in it, or yes, they allowed it to happen, or they encouraged it to happen, yes, or they planned it, who knows, or it was a total Hamas thing. But if you look at the Economist 2012 Christmas edition, you can see that hang gliders were clearly on that front thing. So yeah, that's, so maybe the hang gliders didn't even exist, yeah, and that's just something they've said. Anyway, it's all been meticulously planned, because everything is meticulously planned, as COVID was, the absolutely response, all the possible things that could happen.
Yeah.
So then, if that's the case, why do they think they can get away with what they're doing? It must mean that they believe they've reached a point where they can basically do whatever they want. They know already, yeah, that they can do whatever they want to do, else they wouldn't have started it on October the 7th, 2023.
Yes.
They would have waited till April the 9th, 2027,
yes,
or 2036.
Exactly.
So that means it doesn't matter what the fallout is from what they're doing, because they've already thought this through.
Absolutely.
Or have they totally buoyed with confidence that they think they know what's happening, and it's totally backfired on them?
I think there will be some that are buoyed with confidence for whom it backfires, but they'll be the ones put on the sacrificial altar by their elites. The elites,
yeah, regardless of who's, yeah, taking the fall,
yeah,
whatever's happening is happening.
Absolutely.
So does that mean, do they think we've reached a point of international power influence over these countries, that we can now see all the green lights are all fucking on across all of these, yeah, different things. Now's the time that we can execute,
absolutely,
this next plan, which is really the rinsing of the Palestinians, yeah, out of Gaza, because,
yeah,
because they don't give a fuck,
yeah,
and it's all been planned. All of this rhetoric, all this wordplay must be planned.
Yeah.
Surely it's not just reactive.
Oh, no, it's all planned. I mean, Biden's made his piecemeal statements. Trump completely supports the Israeli cause.
Blinken right now is saying, oh, and obviously Biden has said we need to scale back. Blinken, who is, yeah, Jewish and, yeah, and dual Israeli, is saying this has gone too far, da 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 da.
Oh, just the usual bullshit. Like it was explained to me, I used to briefly date a girl who was studying Middle Eastern politics, and she said anyone that's advocating for this two-state solution, that's just one of the stories that they use as a cover. They're not interested in giving them Palestine. They're going to keep moving in and moving in and moving in and moving in, as they did from 67 and 73 and in the 80s and right throughout the Intifadas and right throughout the noughties and the 2010s, and now this offensive in 2023 onwards to 2024. They won't stop until they've claimed all of that land. Then they will foment more and more wars, and they'll try to use as much Western blood as opposed to their own blood to cause destabilization in the East. They want a war with Iran. And the fact of the matter is, while I'm not a fan of the Iranian government, Iran was a problem reaction solution situation. They had the democratically elected Mohammad Mossadegh in the 50s, who wanted to nationalize the oil interests. His country were being raped by the Yanks, the English, and the French colonial powers. The CIA then went in, fomented a revolution against him. Then they reinstalled the Shah, who used his secret police to torture people. He also threw one of the most, I believe, the most lavish parties of all time, where he invited all of the royal bloodlines to this very weird sacred, like Sumerian site, and they celebrated there. Then finally the Ayatollah was a response to that, and then we got the face of extremism that is Iran today. But most of the Iranians that I've met have been incredibly intelligent, balanced, beautiful Shiites. I've never, ever been wronged by an Iranian. And yet I see my country and other countries being consistently wronged by Israel.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a great line from Muhammad Ali when he, and I, fuck, I love the man for this. When Muhammad Ali was going to be, they conscripted him for war in Vietnam. And this is at the time of all the racism in the 60s and that. And he turned to the reporter and they said, why aren't you going to go and serve your country? And he said to them, matter of fact, he said, ain't no Viet Cong ever called me nigger.
Yeah.
What a fucking line. Yeah, yeah. What a line. And that's it. Why the hell are we supporting? I mean, first things first, you know, why are we supporting Ukraine? That's another thing entirely. You know, I've never had an issue with a Russian.
Vladimir Zelensky, of course, is Jewish.
That's exactly the case. You know, he was a fucking actor, gone to Hollywood, done all these things, he'd made all these deals. I've never been wronged by an Iranian.
But in cahoots with the Nazis, yep. Really, the neo-Nazis.
Exactly.
So this is where you see where's them. The, yeah.
Well,
so
this is at the top of the pyramid. Yeah.
And I know we say this, yep. This is not the first time, or the second time, or the fifth time that we've said this.
But
on
we need
the
to
things.
Keep repeating it to people, especially if they're listening to this the first time. The control system, people, and I refer you to David Icke here. He does it brilliantly. Mark Passio talks about it. He does it brilliantly. The control system, when you go up further and further up the pyramid, is non-human. It's egregore, God-form-based, and it's extraterrestrial. And I'll lay it down here. Call me crazy. Call me racist. Call it what you will. It gets to a point in the control system. This isn't about money. This isn't about just simple power and arms. You know, these people already have enough money.
Well, that's
and
what Galloway
guns.
Was saying.
Exactly.
Galloway said exactly that.
Yep.
It's not about money.
Yeah. This is about, I mean, the future that is being planned is, and this is what Dean Brown quite beautifully stated, and we all agreed on this. The New World Order will be a one world government, probably united by a one world ideology, with an AI control system, a centralized digital cryptocurrency, no hard money, people who are chipped into a sort of augmented reality, and brainwashing at a level you can't even conceive. Everyone out there who hasn't read Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, read it now. Just read it now. 1984 by Orwell's good, but Huxley got it with Brave New World. That is the future we're not just headed towards, we're in right now.
Yeah, that's fucking bonkers. That's exactly 1 hour, Tobias.
I think that's a pretty good point to finish on.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Toby. I'd written in brackets crypto, the system, and capitalism, but we don't want to cover that because we got into Israel. Couple of things, Toby. We put a call out to Sonia Poulton. Sonia Poulton is an investigative journalist who looked into, in a lot of depth, into the McCann case and Savile. And we invited her on to the podcast because she's very good. She's a TNT radio host as well, actually. We invited her onto the podcast and she replied saying, and I'll read it here, thanks for the invite. Unfortunately, I'm currently unable to do any podcasts. I have a case in the High Court to do with an ex-MP who has sued me multiple times over the last 4 years, but it all involves other people's podcasts. So for the time being, the advice is to stick with my own stuff, which is what I'm doing. And then she posts a link to the legal story. So that's a shame because she would be a wealth of information, but also it's a pretty fucking scary topic. We've got Dean doing part three. We've got obviously those other people lined up, and we've also put a call out to Ole Damegaard, who's the sort of false flag conspiracy expert, who I listen to a lot of his stuff, but he seems to have I think it was taken off a lot of platforms, actually.
Anyone who gets close to the truth will get removed from these platforms. There's someone, again, for the sake of their privacy, I've been corresponding with a wonderful human being whose name I won't read out on a thread, who I want to thank for offering a lot of information, and I'm just in the course of having a conversation with that person. But those individuals that you just mentioned there blow my mind, Al. I knew that you had a lot of reach. I didn't realise you'd been in contact with...
Well, they haven't come back and said they'll come on here yet, so my reach is piss at this
point.
It's
still fantastic. And,
there's a big reach, but there's no grab at the end.
Well, we might be able to do the TNT segment as well, if that is still a go-ahead.
Yeah,
it would be an
honour.
It would be an honour, James Freeman. I love what you do, and if you do hear this... please reach out anytime we can do a pre-recorded segment. We'd love to do that. We love your work.
Correct. Shout out to Anastasia Fox and Tracy Davies. They've started following us on Podomatic. Just a couple of new people that are following us now on Podomatic. That's nice, because I'm connected to Anastasia, if that's her real name, on TikTok. So that's good. It's just nice seeing that there's some crossover between the TikTok shit and the podcast. And listen, fucking do what I'm asking. I've asked you about 3 weeks running and no one's fucking listening. We've created a Twitter page, Waking World Twitter, or X as it's now known. We've shared links to every single episode of the podcast, not the bonus shiz, not the Is It News. They're all just on your normal streaming servicey things. But we've linked all of the episodes that are on Podomatic onto X. So if you were to direct anybody to the site, I would probably say, to the podcast, I'd say direct them to X, because on there you'll get a very nicely laid out catalogue of our podcasts.
I agree.
So definitely do that, and send us a fucking message, will you? And jeez, we're coming here, we're doing this, and we're putting four things up a week. Send us a fucking thing so we know that you're listening to it, even if it's moaning. And also on the iTunes thing, there's only two reviews. There's one where I pretended to be just a random listener saying how amazing it was, and then there's some fucking cunt who has said something rude. It was after our first episode, but he reckoned it sounded like we were using the same microphone. But anyway, fuck him. But put some things on there. Press some like buttons. Share it. Pick a fucking episode and share it with someone, please. We got up to number 5 on the Podomatic charts the other day. So do that. What else can you do? We've got a Facebook page. There's a Facebook group called Waking World as well. But I set that up fucking 7 years ago when I had the old website.
There's 1,100 followers, and what I'm doing is sharing articles on that. And it's so good that you did that, because what I'll be doing, I've shared a couple of articles, one on excess mortality via Zero Hedge, which is a fantastic website for people out there looking for good journalism, and another one from Nexus Newsfeed on how dengue fever has increased by 400% in areas that have now had Bill Gates genetically modified mosquitoes introduced to them.
Kel surprise. And a shout out to Dan the Man.
Dan the Man!
I hope you're still listening, Dan. And don't worry, we're not expecting anything from you at all. We just want you to keep listening to the thing. And at a point in which you're feeling like the creative juices are flowing, and maybe you've had a little bit of marijuana, you'll hit us up. And other than that, we hope you're still listening, because you're the man, Dan. The Dan the Man is the man. Toby, I've come awake again now. I'm alive again now. I don't feel all tired. At one point, I was thinking about lying on the carpet there while you were talking and just sort of drifting off. But
I was turning into Mark Passio then. I was channeling my inner fire.
Shall I press the stop button?
Yeah, do let's.
I think I'll press the stop button. Right, so this gets uploaded now, but you won't care about that because you've already listened to it, which means it's already been uploaded. That's great. And then we'll do the Dean thing from Thursday. We'll upload that on Saturday. See you later, yeah?
See you later.